You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our least favorite, most favorite, I don't know. Is the Woker. Supervillain is the Woker. I'm so confused, y'all. We'll talk about it in Trailer Takedown. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, and if you are as confused as to what the hell is going on this week, then do we have a bunch of news stories for you. In fact, I know this is our favorite set of news stories for one of the people about to join us. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
We've done better individual stories, and we've done worse individual stories. But I think as a collective, as a unit, as an integrated whole, these stories are my favorite we've ever done.
It's a pretty good logical progression. I found them all in a bunch of different places, and they kind of just flowed together well. And I liked it. It felt good as a producer. Let no one tell you that podcasts can't be art.
They go down smooth like a PSL on a fall day.
Am I missing something? What the hell does PSL mean?
Oh, that's the correct answer, actually. PSL is pumpkin spice latte.
Okay, because you made that joke. You made that joke pre-show too, and I was trying to fit it into one of the stories and being basic, and I thought maybe that was it, but I couldn't figure out the L.
Latte.
Yeah, that's a lot wrong with what you're saying. Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, just because the stories are good doesn't mean the jokes will be.
Guaranteed.
I mean, that's every episode, isn't it? I mean, that could be a tagline.
It is. Yeah, we got some doozies today.
That's right. Great stories. And also, jokes?
Question mark.
I mean, that fits with the opening to the show, so let's just head into it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Just before we get to some of my favorite collection of stories from all of the time here on the Midside, I got to remind you, a little quick reminder about patreon.com/themidside, where you can go and give us $1, $2, $50, whatever you got. Every time we produce a piece of content, anything really, it helps us keep the lights on and helps us keep providing you stories like this. The Washington Post reports, in an effort to eliminate any joy out of life whatsoever, that your pumpkin spice lattes have an incredibly violent history. So as a reminder, when you're drinking these pumpkin spice lattes every year, and it seems to be earlier and earlier every year that we're getting these things shoved down our literal throats.
Yeah, I saw Halloween candy at Sam's Club. They had like a whole display. It was just like giant bags of Halloween candy. I was like, really? It's technically August 31st when I was there.
Yeah, a little bit earlier every year. We forget about my favorite holiday, Thanksgiving, and we move right on into Christmas, basically, where lights and stuff are up at our stores around here. So anyway, holiday creep's a different story. This story is how every time you drink a pumpkin spice latte, you're drinking genocide. So keep that in mind, basic folks out
there.
Where
do I sign up?
The spices in PSL, the Washington Post reminds us, have a dark history, particularly nutmeg. It's a story of war, genocide, and slavery. The variety of nutmeg we are familiar with is native to the Banda Islands, which is now Indonesia. And in the Middle Ages, the Bandanese became rich trading the spice, but along came whitey. In fact, it was the Portuguese and the Dutch and the British. They were all fighting over these islands and eventually committed genocide of the Bandanese people and took over the spice trade until the 1700s, when some Frenchies stole some seeds, planted it on French islands, and ended the nutmeg monopoly from the Bandanese Islands. But just in case you were having a moment, just in case you had one singular moment, women or whoever else is drinking these out there, white women, I should say, if you had one singular moment where you were not concerned about social justice, remember, your PSLs are genocide drinks. So, Justin, will this change in any way your pattern of not drinking pumpkin spice lattes?
In fact, I may start drinking them now because of this. I have a lot to say, so bear with me. Mm. The first thing I want to say is I thought this was made up because Bandanese sounds like the name of an alien species George Lucas would have created for the prequels. The second thing is, can we just leave basic people alone? Like, there's plenty of us complicated people who are super oppressive. Can we just focus on us? Like, just let the basic people be basic. We don't need to bother them. And then the third thing is, this is how much I have internalized the patriarchy and my own white supremacy. We had a cat growing up named Nutmeg.
Oh, man. Look at you promoting genocide of the Bandanese.
And this is my final thing. This is the serious point. Doesn't everything have a violent history of genocide in the history of humanity? Because isn't that what people did back in the day? They just fucking killed each other to get the shit they wanted? And that's why we tried to create a government based on rationality and reason? Or am I imagining that?
No, that's pretty much the history of history. Yeah. Mm.
So this is just a plug-and-play article, and they're only doing it for clicks because they know basic people will read it because it's about pumpkin spice, which they love.
It is about clicks. It's also, I think, sinister in what I was saying in my sort of sarcastic introduction, which is there can be nothing outside of the, what is it called? The not integrated, what is the word that the social justice people use?
Intersectional.
Intersectional. Thank you. There can be nothing outside of the intersectional ideology here. Everything you do, everything you consume, everything you don't do, everything must be made intersectional. And you must be made to feel bad about everything you do so that you can have the most amount of guilt at all times. It is, in fact, a modern day religion. William, did you know that this matter was settled in 1667 when the English agreed to end its claims to the Bandas in exchange? Bandas does sound like a Star Wars. Okay. In exchange for an island.
In exchange for the 4K cuts of the Star Wars trilogy.
Close. In exchange for an island the Dutch considered worthless, Manhattan. So, William, should people living on Manhattan give their land back to the Dutch and then give that land back to the Bandanese?
Absolutely. They absolutely should. But only the ones that were alive and affected by this.
Oh.
Oh,
that
wait,
seems sensible
you're telling
to
me. This happened in the past? Like several hundred years in the past?
Yes.
Oh, that's a little awkward. Why is it that when we hold up the mirror, the intersectional mirror to our culture, we dig way, way back and find all these evil things that happened and not look at how we're treating people today, right? Like looking at behavior we can control and that we can take responsibility for. I know this is, I know I forgoed my white gay male privilege, but part of that privilege is being treated as an individual and not being held responsible for the sins of my fathers or my transgender male parental figures. So it seems super awkward that we're supposed to trace back several hundred years and feel guilty about actions taken by people we have no connection with whatsoever.
Indeed.
William, I think the answer to that question is, as much as people suck nowadays, we still pretty generally treat other people pretty well in the history of the world contextually. I think that's why they have to go back in time.
Clearly. we live in the least violent, most prosperous, healthiest time in human history. And so we have to go back and look at these eras that were much less peaceful, much more violent to, again, justify the amount of guilt we're supposed to hold over this, because guilt is the way that we get people to do what we want them to do, is we make them feel guilty about what it is they're doing, and then we make them do other things for penance for that guilt.
We have
the Catholic Church
should
be.
So you're saying intersectionality is a, like, your high school girlfriend or something, manipulating you by guilt and
high school?
Yeah. Gaslighting you?
Yeah.
Every woman ever?
Oh, man.
Yes, very much so. And the Catholic Church should check on their trademark or copyright on guilt, because, man, the social justice warriors are encroaching hard.
Well, that's just because of the Jewish influence on the social justice warriors on the extreme left.
God.
Yeah.
Who are you, Alex Jones?
I think it's really important. You know, we talk about it, like, the unearned guilt is really the poison that allows this intersectionality to happen. And you're absolutely right. This is exactly the kind of manipulation that I was brought up in a more religious area. This is exactly the attempt. The same attempt was made, right, to manipulate by guilt. And it's so blatant for people who have been through or have had that strict religious experience or seeing that culture. It's exactly the same formula.
Well, yeah, what it is the result of our trauma-based culture. And what I mean by that is the amount of trauma people have experienced. It's been shown time and time again that these social justice warriors, these people who acted this way, have been through shit. So they need to find a way to make other people feel bad, because they don't understand why other people don't feel bad for them being a victim. So they're just trying to reach in any way to prove the society is fucked up rather than deal with their own shit.
Astute point. And I want to be clear to those out there drinking pumpkin spice lattes, you should feel bad about drinking them. I'm not saying you should not feel bad. They're objectively terrible. But you should not feel bad because nutmeg has a violent past.
Cat was just trying to live, man. I'm sorry the cat went outside and killed mice. I don't know why you need to keep bringing up the fact that nutmeg was violent. Like, cats are gonna cat.
Also, in terms of things that have a violent past, nutmeg sounds the cutest. In terms of things that have sparked genocides, nutmeg, adorable. A not adorable problem that Seattle and other cities are having is human poop on the streets. We are not, in fact, reading a story from the 1700s, like the last story, but in fact, a story from today. Seattle officials can't agree on how to remove human crap from sidewalks. So Seattle has a human feces problem, which is incredible to say in 2019, but the city council cannot agree on how to remove said feces. So a couple proposals made, one of which was to power wash the sidewalk. Sounds reasonable, but hold on a minute. Councilman Larry Gossett.
Wait, did you just say butthole?
I was trying to be subtle in my poop jokes for this episode, but you can call them out if you want, as you find them. I was going to make a Shiite joke, too, later, so just heads up. Councilmember Larry Gossett says that power washing the sidewalks is racist because it brings up images of using hoses against civil rights activists. I'm going to let that sink in for a second. So this is from
the
Seattle
civil rights
News.
Activists are the poop in this analogy, right?
That's what I was going to say. What's this guy subtly saying about civil rights?
Now, this council member is black, or I should say is a person of color, since I don't know.
You don't know what he identifies as.
Right.
As someone who
should be retarded
identifies
is what he identifies
white,
as.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is all insane. Another council member by the name of Mary Hendrickson said that, oh, and by the way, this human feces problem is mostly coming from homeless people. It's not from tourists and whatever.
Well, yeah,
but
it's all the homeless people who are on drugs in Seattle, because to be homeless in Seattle, you have to be on drugs. Seattle is the worst homeless. Okay, I know it's bad in LA, but when you go to Seattle, they're like fucking aggressive because you have to be on drugs. Like in Southern California, you can just be like a dude with mental illness who's like, you know, if I'm going to be homeless, I might as well be homeless in the sun and with this weather. But in Seattle, with how fucking cold and overcast and ugly it is, you got to be on drugs.
Yeah, in order to just survive the day. So Seattle resident, not council member, Seattle resident Mary Hendrickson in the meeting said that she'd been homeless for a time and had no fear of the people who hang out near the courthouse. Compared to other gatherings, she said they're actually a pretty docile group. Sometimes they'll be yelling and drinking, she said, but they're not intimidating to me. Now, Justin, one, maybe me, had thought that we had solved the human feces problem when we invented indoor plumbing and sanitation. Apparently I'm wrong. How did this become a problem in 2019?
Well, I mean, this is a relation to the homeless problem is what it is, as I was just alluding to. It's just because they've got so many fucking people wandering around the streets because of their irrational laws that they're literally just taking dumps wherever they feel like it. That's all it is. I mean, it's part of the regression that we're seeing.
And your city, LA.
Well, I'm in Anaheim. Careful. Careful.
Has a typhus outbreak that could potentially lead to the plague because of the homeless situation there.
I know. Dr. Drew's been talking about it for like 2 years, and then it finally happened, and it's like, hey, all you guys have to do is listen to the same podcast I do at the gym. That's it, guys. Come on. We saw this coming. But, yeah, it's part of the regression that is slowly happening. And I really believe you go to these cities and you live in these places and you can see the decline of society due to extreme leftism. I really believe that. I mean, Daniel, you lived out here for a time. William, you live out here. Isn't this just evidence of it? I mean, I go around every day and I'm like, things are getting worse. It's literally going backwards.
Well, I'll frame this to William like this, which is this an example of the very important axiom that we don't take seriously, that progress is not inevitable?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably true. I know I've had several people in the few weeks the store has been open claim the bathroom for hour or so at a time, presumably not going to the bathroom. And this is in Long Beach, right? Like, this isn't even the worst part of LA. I can't imagine trying to deal with the problems that come with being in downtown LA, not only from the hygiene aspect, but the mental health issues and things like that. There's just no infrastructure in place to deal with these things. In fact, we've got it incredibly backwards on a lot of those things. And I know Dr. Drew just talked about it on his podcast, like why that is. But yeah, the progress is not automatic and change is not progress. That's the other thing, right? It's a very, you know, progressive. It's got progressive in the name, right? I think Adam Carolla says that all the time. So it must be good, right? All change is good. And that's not necessarily true.
I have a question for you, William. What do you do in that case where they're in the bathroom for over an hour?
Well, you knock a few times, turn the music off, and then you call the police.
So you've had to call the police a few times?
Yes, we've called the police. I see the report from our phone system. We've called 911 five times since we opened.
See, that's the thing about that, where it's fucking horrendous because you have this nice new store, right? It's a beautiful store. The way it looks, everything is great about it. And all I can think about is all the bathrooms in Southern California in any public place are gross and shitty and destroyed because this happens. Because people go in it and just destroy the shit. And there's nothing you can do, William. For that hour, your nice infrastructure is at the mercy of these people. And it's terrible.
To be clear, my bathroom is still nice, pristine, and beautiful. So,
Well, good. I'm glad. I'm really, really glad, because it's a very nice bathroom with a very nice trash can, I'd like to point out.
It's the little things that you could tell that Matt and I put the store together. There's little things like that.
So, Justin.
Yes.
What do we do with the homeless people? What is the solution here? Because the city of LA will tell you that the number one reason people are homeless is they don't have homes. It's the cost of living that keeps people homeless. But that can't possibly be the reason, could it?
Well, I thought the hoses sounded like an elegant solution to me.
My God, this is the Alex Jones podcast. I've stumbled upon the Alex Jones podcast. How did this happen?
Well, the aliens.
So turning the frogs
you
gay.
See. The alien. Jeffrey Epstein was really an alien. And he didn't kill himself. He got beamed back up.
Ah, perfect. And we put Anthony Bourdain's body in his place.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. You figured it out. How'd you know? You're part of the conspiracy. I gotta go.
So what do we do with these people?
So this is tough, right? Because there is something to be said about the cost of living. There is something to be said in Southern California about if you're going to be homeless, might as well be homeless in Southern California. And I don't want to like reduce this, but this really is a mental health issue. Okay, even if it didn't start out, that's why you started being homeless. If you continue to be on the streets and you're taking drugs for that long, like in Seattle, that's a mental health issue. Drugs. And I heard there's a program in San Diego that's starting to work where there are families with missing people that they legitimately can't find. And they take the homeless people, they gather them, and they bring them to a spot. And the families come and they identify whether those are their family members. And they're actually placing a lot of these homeless in San Diego in the homes they're from, which is helping San Diego a lot. Now, is that the answer? I don't know if that's the answer. But my point is there needs to be infrastructure to deal with this, as if there's a problem of these are lost people due to mental health. And it needs to be treated in that way.
Plus drug problems, right?
Right, but drug problems are a result of mental health, right? Addiction is a mental health issue.
Okay. If we're going to lump that all, then it is mental health. But I want to be particular that whether it's meth, heroin, or even alcohol, these people have substance abuse problems for the most part.
Right. And here's the thing that's tough for me, Daniel. Okay. This is tough for me as an objectivist, libertarian, minarchist, whatever the fuck you want to call me. To me, this would be a legitimate use of government. Right? We're wasting all this money in California. We're wasting all this money throughout this country on all this bullshit taxes. When this is a legitimate threat, right? You just go listen to Dr. Drew. This is a legitimate threat to health. Not of just the people who are homeless, but of all the citizens. This is literally sending people back to the time of the plague, where, you know, I work for the state of California, and you hear about these maintenance workers who didn't sign up for this shit, who have to go clean up homeless encampments on the state right of way, the state highway right of way, and they have to pick up needles and shit. It legitimately becomes a health risk for these people. So to me, this is a legitimate use of government. I mean, would it be wrong for government to open up asylums again?
This is very complicated, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot and make you be the homeless expert. I apologize for that.
Well, I just
although
did
you
it.
Do live in LA, so. but what I'll say is that one, you know, all this is happening on public property, right? So a reduction in public property would at least change the problem in a certain sense, because you wouldn't allow people to have these encampments just wherever and for as long as they want. And I think
to hit the point on that a little bit more, the fact that it's on public property in California makes it more complicated. Did you know that in order to remove an encampment in California, they have to be given 72 hours notice? You can't just move them. You have to like give them written notice and then move them 72 hours later.
So you're saying that I could camp out tomorrow in front of, I don't know, the mayor's office, and I would have 72 hours to camp out there.
Yes, you could. If they removed you before 72 hours, you could sue for having your civil rights violated. And there are homeless advocacy groups and lawyers now who, when the removals are happening, they're there making sure all their stuff is not disposed of.
Yeah. And even in those cases, there are things about it where it's like, okay, well, you moved it there, so they moved down the block a bit, right? It's like,
well, that's what happened to the city of Placentia. There were all the homeless people behind Angel Stadium on the Santa Ana River Trail, so Anaheim kicked them all out. So all they did was move over a city to the city of Placentia, and now the city of Placentia is a fucking bigger shithole than it was before.
You're saying the city of Placentia,
named
right?
Placentia?
Yeah.
Like the birthplace of homelessness?
Yes.
Okay. So I will say, in terms of use of state power, I don't think it's necessary, but I think what San Diego is doing is actually as close to a legitimate use of state power as it gets, even though it may not be. What they're doing, just to add a little bit to what you said, is essentially they have an ordinance that you are basically not allowed to sleep outside, like on in front of a business or near a public park or near a school. There are still rules. You can sleep in places that aren't occupied or whatever, that are public property, but you can't be within so many feet of a business. You can't be in so many places of a school, park, etc. And what that means is they will give you a place to sleep. They will give you a place to stay, and they've built a ton of infrastructure around that. But what happens is, when you're there, there are doctors to diagnose problems, you get showers, you get fed, and then they do everything they can, as you were saying, Justin, to identify your family. And then they contact your family, and your family then becomes responsible for you.
Yes, the homeless buyback program.
Yeah, I think there's two sort of principles here, and I don't know all the particulars of how to solve this. It's a complicated problem like we've been discussing, but there's two principles that we have to use to guide us through this. And one is, you know, one is about the role of government, right, and protection of rights. And Justin, you've been hitting that one pretty hard, right? When this problem starts affecting the rights of others, then the government there's a role for the government here, especially when we're talking about the hygiene and health issues, when we're talking about the property rights violations, camping out in front of businesses and
going in William's bathroom for an hour,
themselves in my bathroom for an hour, those sort of things, right? And then insofar as the government has options on those things, they should obviously be trying to minimize any further downstream impacts, right? We see that a lot, with the advocacy groups, the homeless advocacy groups, really just making the problem worse in the name of, I don't know, in the name of homeless advocacy. But then the other
William,
side
I
of
have
this,
another question for you.
Sure.
Do you legally have to provide a bathroom to anyone who comes in and asks?
Not yet, but I'm sure California will be passing a law on that soon.
Okay, because you need to get that key on there, and then you can like make people answer a questionnaire before. You'd be like The Walking Dead when they meet new people.
I will not be in longer than 42 minutes.
Hey, just like The Walking Dead, how many people have you killed? Why did you kill them?
So the second principle we have to, so that's on the government side. What about on the interpersonal side? We've got to remember the principle of justice. There, insofar as folks are mentally ill, they've sort of lost their ability to choose, right? Their machinery is messed up, and getting them the help they need is something that we should be trying to do. But we know that there are people who make this choice constantly, right? Like there mm-hmm. are, and this is maybe controversial, there are people who deserve it, right? There are people who are making bad choices and getting themselves into bad situations. And we can't fake reality and try to cover for them, right? They're going to have to deal with the consequences of their actions. Now, this isn't all homeless people, and this is certainly not the ones that are mentally disabled. But there are bad people in the world, right? And we can't use the calculus of need, well, this person needs a home because they're homeless, as the way to determine what actions we should take. We have to remember the principle of justice.
Oh, certainly, certainly. And I wasn't meaning to frame it as need of these people. And actually, the last point you brought up is very interesting, and it's something I've thought about. These people who are willfully, over and over again, choosing to be homeless and violating private property and, you know, committing crimes in order to stay alive. Because if you're homeless and you don't have a job, you have to be committing crimes to just get food to eat. Unless you're living completely off of begging, which I don't see how that's possible. Is it really right to then arrest them and put them in jail and then have them living off the taxpayers' dole?
Man, complicated. If they're committing crimes, at least it stops them from committing crimes. If they're a legitimate threat to other people's rights, then that's sort of the point overall. But in many ways, you know, the people who choose to be homeless and who sort of beg and whatever, that has been a part of society for basically ever. That's just an element of humanity that seems to exist throughout generations. And I think that's a small enough percentage that if it was just limited to those people in that category, it wouldn't actually be an epidemic.
Yeah.
I think the epidemic part comes in that we no longer deal with people who have mental issues and substance abuse problems, and we just let them be where they are, continuing to have mental issues and substance abuse problems, thinking that that is the compassionate way to be, to live, let them live, leave them be alone. But
they're living their truth.
Just think of that metaphor,
Daniel.
Of like it was a broken leg.
Yes, living their truth. That's right. Their truth of heroin addiction.
That's what I mean. Like, okay, well, I'm just respecting them. I'm letting them live his truth of a broken leg.
Yeah, and it's clearly hurtful to them, and it's clearly a threat to everyone else through typhus outbreaks and human feces problems and potentially the GD plague. So I don't think it's actually compassion, and I don't think it's actually even altruistic, oddly. It's just horrific all the way around, so we need to do something about it.
So before we move on, I want to make one note. The article we linked to about this feces problem is on Gateway Pundit, but when you click on the Seattle Times article it's referencing, the headline says from 2017. So Daniel, check me on this. I have a vague recollection of talking about this hose thing before. Have we?
As you know, I have no idea what we've ever talked about on this show.
Right. So somebody out there, check us on it. It became an amazing discussion about the homelessness issue anyway. So I'm glad we put this on there. But this may have been a technical retread story.
Did we just get hoaxed?
No, we didn't get hoaxed. But
oh, okay. So we did get hosed.
Yes.
Okay. Well, someone else who's getting hosed are old white guys. As academic science rethinks its all-too-white dude walls of honor.
Old white guys are getting hosed?
In a certain sense. So a few years ago, Rachel Maddow was at Rockefeller University to hand out a prize that's given each year to a prominent female scientist. And as Maddow entered the auditorium, someone overheard her say, "What is up with the dude wall?" She was referring to a wall covered with portraits of scientists from the university who have either won a Nobel Prize or the Lasker Award, a major medical prize. 100% of them are men, likely 30-ish headshots, all men. And Leslie Vosshall, a neurobiologist with the university and the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, says, "It's imposing." So Vosshall says Maddow's remark and the word dude wall crystallized something that had been bothering her for years, and now she travels around the country and sees these portraits everywhere, and scientific institutions are starting to do something about it. So these dude walls are everywhere, apparently, in science, and universities are starting to move the portraits, they're starting to take down the portraits, they're starting to commission new paintings or get new pictures of female scientists and minority scientists from the past who contributed and put them up. This is perhaps my favorite part of the story, which is Max Jordan, unpronounceable Tiako, a medical student at Yale, said he grew up reading Harry Potter books, and in the fictional world, the portraits can talk to characters. He says, quote, if this was Harry Potter, if they could speak, i.e. the portraits in these halls, what would they even say to me? Somewhere you study, there's a big portrait somewhere of someone kind of staring you down. So the literal male gaze, Justin, is happening at universities right now, and it's all old white men. So what should be done? Should we hashtag tear down the dude walls?
I think we should all just live the principle by the principle of what if our lives was Harry Potter, and then everything would be okay. just teach me magic and I can do whatever I want. No, on those walls, we should just put up pictures of black transgender midgets who have celiac disorder.
Little people.
Whatever the fucking term is. This is ridiculous. In the history of the world, weren't these discoveries made by old white men?
Well, let's just frame it differently. These discoveries, these awards, these whatever, were made by who they were made by. And this isn't a situation where it's like, oh, we discovered these scientists were hashtag me too, part, you know, being aggressive sexually or whatever. It's we're now ashamed, even though they accomplished all these great things, because they're all of one gender and one race.
Well, because they would say it's, you know, they're not me too on an individual level, but they're me too on the collective level of the patriarchy and the oppressive society, which is problematic.
Yeah, that's what they would say. Yeah, it's insidious to me, even because it's not even, you know, I don't think. But it's like tearing down statues of Thomas Jefferson because he owned slaves. I mean, I even think that is wrong, but at least you have he owned slaves. Here it's they had all these great scientific discoveries, but their pictures have to go anyway because it intimidates people.
No, Daniel. It's because they're guilty of being white. Remember, it's not okay to be white.
Right.
We found this out when people started carrying around signs saying it's okay to be white, that it's not okay to be white.
Yeah. So, William.
Look. No, hold on. Okay. Hold on. Maybe this is more of the Alex Jones podcast.
Oh, God.
Look, I know you're sidestepping the issue, but old white men made these discoveries, okay? If you want your pictures up on the wall, other races and genders, discover some shit. What's the name of the woman who discovered. Fuck.
Madame Curie discovered radioactivity. Yeah.
Is her picture not on the wall somewhere?
Ada Lovelace, the first programmer.
Do we just not put these women's pictures up?
No, I've seen them both.
We could put them up, but they're women, so we're not going to put them up. No, I think we put them up and we know their names and we talk about it because they discovered shit. You want your pictures up? Do shit.
Yeah.
Is that
other genders and races?
Yeah. Other genders and races?
Okay, moving on from Alex Jones to William. So the idea that these are intimidating, that they're staring down, you know, they're using these words like they're being oppressive, that to me sounds like an individual's problem. Does it not?
Yeah,
I say that. You feel intimidated by portraits?
If you are fantasizing about pictures staring you down and talking to you, I don't think the solution is to move the pictures. I think the solution is to talk to a psychologist.
And this is, Dr. Drew said this once about, I think this was about the statues issue in particular, where he said, you know, if it's something where it does trigger you and you have legitimate anxiety over these things, think about it not so in terms of statues or whatever, but think about it in terms of elevators. If someone says these elevators intimidate me, these elevators are staring me down, they're oppressing me, we don't tell the building to remove the elevators. We get the person treatment because there is clearly something wrong with them.
In California, we might remove the elevators.
I just think we're creating mass anxiety as a culture and demanding that reality change around the anxiety instead of fixing the anxiety.
Yeah, this is all about erasing the past and faking reality, and the guilt manipulation, like we talked about with the earlier story. but I am waiting with bated breath for the rewrite of not just man's achievements, but man's depravity. When are we going to rewrite, you know, Nazi history to include women and minorities? Right? Hitler's crew is all just a bunch of white men.
Nobody complains about the roofers.
How dare he? There were probably women and minorities, right? There had to be, right?
That's right. What about the role of Eva Braun? We need more about that.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
Yeah. We need, what other depravities can we
this
reverse
is
whitewash?
Justin,
by
this
the
is,
way,
as you were
see?
Saying, the yeah. Adam Carolla Jewish roofer problem, ironically.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Oh, man. I bet there were women who gave Native Americans smallpox blankets. We should get on that. Those women's achievements should be recognized.
That's right.
But speaking of which, this is sort of tangentially related. Did you see that the Auschwitz Twitter account is trying to get to 750,000 followers?
Stop.
What?
Auschwitz has a Twitter account?
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Now look, I don't. Oh my goodness. Thanks for ruining my day. That's horrific. Why?
I don't know. And as a Polish person who's been to Auschwitz, I was kind of like, what? Why are you trying to get more followers? Like, I agree. This is something people need to be educated on. And you need to, you know, if you can, I think it's important to go there and have that experience. But the whole Auschwitz thing is weird. And I talked about it before, but I'm going to reiterate it because it's kind of similar to what William's saying now. And when we're all talking about this guilt thing, the fact that people are lining up to go to Auschwitz now is very strange to me. And it's also very strange that you like go there and they give you a tour and you walk through the gas chamber. So you're literally in the gas chamber with a bunch of other people. And it's very strange. I don't know if that's a victory or if it's a loss, but it's very strange, and the whole thing is very strange with the trying to gather the Twitter followers too.
Who
would you
retweets
say
Auschwitz?
Rounding up Twitter followers?
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Okay,
now we have to move on.
I would like to clarify that as a Polish person who's been there, I did not say that. William made that joke, although that is pretty funny.
University in Australia, a university is lowering the entry score for female applicants in male-dominated courses in an effort to address the gender imbalance in engineering, computing, and construction. So the University of Technology Sydney is trying to encourage, think about that word, more young women to study engineering, computing, and construction by adjusting year 12 entry scores for female applicants. The university has received approval from the Anti-Discrimination Board, this is so Atlas Shrugged, to make a 10-point adjustment to the Australian tertiary admission rank of female students applying for those degrees for the 2020 academic year. The university hopes it will help address gender imbalances in those male-dominated industries. So the director of this program, or someone, I don't know, I can't really tell, says, "We're not taking in underperforming students or doing tokenism here," she told The Guardian. "Nobody is getting a free pass. They all have to do all the degree requirements and internships." She's just hoping that this will bring more women in. Right now, it's 4-8% in those degrees, and they're hoping that will increase it to about 20% in those degrees. So, Justin, no tokenism here. We're just lowering the bar for one gender so we can have more of them.
So I think they just revealed something here, right? Because if the standards are lower and they expect them to still graduate, I think they just revealed that the hardest part of the program is getting into the program. And they revealed how much of a sham their entire product is, their product being the education they're providing. Because
ding, 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 ding.
Theoretically, right? If you it's easier for you to get in, you should do worse in the school because the people who had to actually meet the standards would be the ones who are capable of handling it. So what this really is, you know, we could talk about all day how, you know, oh yeah, obviously it's tokenism. Like, I mean, that's that's stupid, right? Obviously,
whenever anyone says we're absolutely not doing X, be clear that they're almost certainly doing X.
Yeah, that's a good principle to live by.
Yes.
But yeah, exactly. They're doing that, obviously. But what this is really revealing is how bad the education system is and how people are not getting an education. Because if the education was good and it was really that hard, these women would just wash out. Or you would have to make the courses easier so they could pass, which just means we're going to have shittier engineers. But what this is already telling us is we already have shitty engineers because the coursework already sucks. So wake up call, world.
We already know from studies in the U.S. that when minorities were given bonus points and let into prestigious universities, that their washout rate was super high, that they were actually worse off than similarly scoring folks who went through community college and went to a quote-unquote lesser school. So we know that this hurts the very people that's seeking to help. But also, wouldn't people just start as someone who identifies as a woman for this podcast, wouldn't this just become another game to get in? I mean, I would just identify as a woman so I could get in. I mean, there's an advantage to being a woman, then you're going to have more women, right?
Right. I thought about this angle, too, and let's apply this to sports, okay? So now we're starting to see a lot of women's sports records being broken because men are identifying as women and then competing and breaking the records. Well, then, eventually what's going to happen is it's going to be one amorphous blob where it's all sports or just all people are in it. Except everyone's going to identify as a woman in order to get the extra points they need to compete with the men. And then it's just going to go back to the beginning where it's just all the people who are biologically women are going to get the lesser scores because everyone's going to be equal because everyone will just be identifying as a woman, but they'll just be whatever their natural biology is.
The thing we're fighting against here, and this is the secret that no one wants to talk about, is we're fighting against volition. People are choosing the degree they want to be in. They're choosing it for whatever reasons, right? Their own personal individual reasons. And when you look at applicants and you say, well, 7% of them are women and that's a problem, I say, fuck you. Because those people choose what thing they want to study, what degree they want to get. And if you're trying to manipulate people into being an engineer when they don't really want to be, what a terrible life that you're sentencing them to.
Right. It would be interesting to see how many of these people who get in go on to be engineers in the long run, or how many drop out of engineering to do something else compared to people who chose it not through these strange incentive measures. But here I am, right, back in the old woke, still thinking that there's no differences between men and women, right? That there is zero, absolutely no evidence that there's any difference whatsoever between men and women, yet we need to lower the entry score for women so more of them can get into these programs.
But again, Daniel, the answer will always be that there is no difference. It's just the systematic oppression has made it appear that there are differences.
So this university is admitting to systematically oppressing women?
Yes, in the past. But that's not their fault. They've just gotten control of the system. And now that they've gotten control of it, they're going to right the wrongs of the straight white males from the past.
Weren't they in control of the system last year?
Progress takes time, Daniel. With all the white men out there trying to stop them from fixing things, you think they can do it that easily?
None of this makes sense.
Look, I can be a social justice warrior easily. All you do is deflect blame and place it on other people. It's not difficult, people.
Yeah, it's getting hard for me to... We're going to have to start having generations of woke, like we had, or waves of woke, like we had of feminism, like first wave woke,
Amber
second
waves
wave
woke.
Because we've now gone from woke to woker.
Well,
that's a transition for you.
Yeah, I know. I think that sums it up, and we'll get we'll get to that a little bit more in the trailer takedown. But for now, let's talk about someone who takes on this insane social justice culture in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made for TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. As always, if you want to join the conversation during the week, you need to get in our Discord. We've had a lot of people joining the Discord. William, have you noticed that there's been an uptick in Discord membership?
There has been. We've had some good story submissions, some good conversations, so jump on in. And if you're a Patreon supporter, there's a special secret channel that you can join as well.
Look at that. I was just asking for a yes or a no, and he just finished the plug for me.
Plug.
Thank you for that, William. Very professional. Let's head into the review now. And we're going to do things a little differently. We're not going to talk about a movie. We're not going to talk about a TV show. We are going to talk about some stand-up comedy that swept the news this past week. Daniel asked to talk about it. I had to watch it because everyone was talking about it so much. Just right off the top before we even go into the content of it, I laughed. I laughed a lot. And this is from someone who didn't like this comedian when he had a show on Comedy Central. I'm, of course, referring to Dave Chappelle. I was not a big fan of the Dave Chappelle show. I thought that a lot of the jokes were very contrived. A lot of the skits were very contrived. So it's like the black white supremacist. What if we had a black blind guy, but who was accidentally in the Klan? Because he didn't. It wasn't funny to me. It was not funny. But the stuff now, since he went away for a while and then he came back, I think he really found reality when he left, and it's made his comedy very, very funny. And I thought this is probably my favorite special of his that I've ever seen. More than remember he just said a couple of years ago he had those two that came out. There was some good stuff in there, but I laughed consistently in this one, whereas before I didn't. So I think Dave Chappelle is getting better. What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I've enjoyed him immensely since his return, his first special, which I cannot remember the name of to save my life. His very first Netflix special of his return, I thought was very good as well, and also had a tinge of this. You could see that he was on this train of seeing that the social justice movement was bad for free speech and bad for, as he says, bad for black people, actually. But it wasn't all about that. This new special is all about that. It takes it on explicitly, not the sort of implicit reading of it where he's taking out things. He calls it out explicitly. And I think he does it in a way that is not only brilliant, as Dave Chappelle can do, but in a way that's a very aggressive. And what I mean by that is I think he basically is saying this needs to be taken down on its face and more people need to do this, whether or not I ever work again or not. That's basically what he's saying. I've made enough money. You can go F yourselves because you're a horrible movement. This is a horrible cultural time and someone needs to say it. And it's all the more remarkable because it's coming from Dave Chappelle, who was for a very long time considered a darling of the left. And someone that the left would embrace and hold up as one of their voices, one of the people who speaks for them. And now the left has moved so far to social justice that they've left even Dave Chappelle behind.
Well, and that's one of the amusing things for me from this past week, Daniel, is that insanity is seeing them try to rationalize this stuff that Dave Chappelle is saying. Where I've literally seen takes where people are like, oh, he doesn't really believe these things. He's just saying them because they're funny. Don't think he's on your side, the right.
That's the hilarious thing about this, right? Which is they try to shift it to, and even the right is doing this, right? Like he's on the right now, or he's joined the right side, or he's a libertarian, or whatever it is. Dave Chappelle, in terms of his views, is exactly where he was 20 years ago. It is the left who has abandoned Dave Chappelle. Not the other way around. He's joked about a lot of these things in various small bits for a long time, and he's doing it more refined now and better, I think, but now the left has moved to this social justice craziness to the point where he is no longer in the woke crowd.
Well, I think
except
it
that
shows...
Dave Chappelle doesn't give an F.
Right, right. And I think it shows how the left traditionally was America, was American, not America, they were American, and they weren't anti the Constitution about changing the fundamentals of society. It was a legitimate disagreement on how to apply the ideas that the founding fathers had. And now it's so far that it's they don't even agree with it anymore that many people on the left are seeing how insane they are.
So let's... William, did you watch this before we go any further?
No, I watched the Q&A that was on YouTube already, and I watched the Q&A at the end and really enjoyed that. So it's on my queue to watch this weekend.
You should check it out. But before we get any further into analysis, we're already really far. Why don't we talk about any bits of it that we thought were particularly important? And by the way, it's on Netflix. It's called Sticks and Stones. Dave Chappelle's fourth comedy special since returning. Justin, any particular part stand out to you as exceptional? I have a couple thoughts.
I mean, all of it, but the one that really stood out to me was the school shooting jokes. Mm. And he got right to the edge of critiquing public education, and he pulled back. But just his commentary on the fear-mongering of it and the stupidity of it, and I'm going to spoil the joke here, but he was talking about how they go through drills now for school shootings. Like, this is what you do if there's a school shooting. And he's like, I don't need my kids to do that. All you're doing is scaring the shit out of them. And it's like, yeah, he's pointing out how they're just using public education to scare these kids. But then he also pointed out the stupidity of it, where he goes, and if there's going to be a school shooting, isn't one of these kids in the drill going to be the school shooter? So aren't you basically training him by showing him what everyone else is going to be doing during his rampage? So you're basically training the school shooters.
Yeah.
I just thought that was brilliant because it points out the failures of public education, but also the failures of government, where they're trying to organize these things, and they're defeating their own goals. And again, as you said, I think that Dave Chappelle didn't take it that extra step because he's not anti-public education. So he didn't see the applications of what he was saying, but it's so extreme now that he's seeing the flaws and the extremeness of it.
Yeah. There's a bit about how in an election year, the only thing black people can do to worry, to guard against gun violence and to make a change, you know, in regards to their safety when it comes to guns, is everyone in this election year needs to go out and register to carry a firearm. And it was a big sort of take you down one path change at the end sort of moment. And a lot of his comedy in this special was like that, where he was subverting expectations for, you know, what a normal woke comedian would say in that particular spot. The whole thing is irreverent, and that's kind of why I like it, is it throws all PC out the window. It does a ton of jokes that would get any other comedian just totally blacklisted forever, and he does an hour and a half of it.
Careful.
Really?
That at that time I didn't mean it. A lot of times I mean my stupid humor. In that case, it just slipped. Now it's yet to be seen if he will be can't say blackballed, can't say okay, scape you know, whatever. We'll see if he is, but the irreverence of the entire special is so refreshing because it's comedy that's unafraid. And I think that's why it's funny. And it actually took me a little bit not to get into it and to see the humor, but there were some things like off the bat where I wasn't laughing, but I was going literally, you know, making the like sort of like breathe in, like you can't say that anymore. You're not allowed to say those things anymore, which is why I think this is a special is not only good, it's necessary. It's necessary because it actually allows us a moment to remember what comedy was like when comedians were allowed to joke about things. which is what makes it particularly remarkable. I'll say for the record that I thought my favorite section was the concluding section about Jesse Smollett and how Dave Chappelle, and he says the entire black community knew immediately that he was lying. I won't spoil any of the jokes in that because I think it's just wildly, wildly hysterical. But he really does a number on the media and the social justice people. And I don't know, this is one of my favorite stand-up specials in a long time because of its honesty and because of its irreverence.
For the Jesse Smollett stuff where he says that they were helping him by being quiet.
Yeah.
He's saying, you know, people were asking where black people were. And he's like, we were helping him by not saying anything. That's a very reality focused that joke in that point. And I was like, wow, that's a great point. I didn't have the same reaction as you. And maybe it's because I'm an asshole, but I was laughing the whole time. Like, I wasn't taken aback. I was like, finally, someone's fucking saying shit. And then it was like, I saw a commercial or on Twitter. It's like, Bill Burr comes out on the 8th. And I was like, ah, that's why they did Dave Chappelle first, to get us all used to the insanity that's about to happen.
Yeah. So I highly recommend this to everyone who is tired of PC humor, who is tired of having a small mini political lecture in the middle of their humor, who's tired of the, you know, Amy Schumers of the world and the Hasan Minhajes who use their stand-up purely as social justice platforming, and who actually just want someone who's going to make jokes about some of the most uncomfortable topics of our time. I don't think you'll like this if you're not into vulgarity, but other than that, I think you will enjoy it.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the media reaction, because it's been a hilarious shit show. It all sort of started with the Vice article, a headline, "You can definitely skip Dave Chappelle's new Netflix special, Sticks and Stones. The comedian doubles down on misogyny and transphobia in both the special and the hidden bonus scenes." So they were triggered almost immediately. And it's the twisting and the flagellations to both denounce him and treat him with the right amount of wokeness at the same time is just hilarious. I've watched some YouTubers that have tried to take this down. I've read a lot of articles. So it's very I'm looking forward to watch it just based on the media reaction alone.
Yeah, wasn't it the Babylon Bee who had some sort of, I'm going to bastardize it, but had some sort of headline that was like, social justice warriors only want, come out and acknowledge they only want black voices when they're saying the things they want them to say. This is what that feels like.
I know we didn't cover it, but I mentioned in Discord this week that Snopes is fact checking the Babylon Bee. So I can't wait to read the Snopes fact check on that.
Yes.
Snopes has been doing that for like a month now.
Yeah.
It's getting worse, strangely.
Well, it's getting worse because the Babylon Bee is antagonizing them now because they think it's hilarious. So it's like this war now.
Their article that Snopes declares Babylon Bee most accurate news site on the internet.
Yeah.
And that Snopes had to fact check that was awesome.
Hilarious.
But yeah, every social justice outlet was basically saying you don't need to watch this special. Nothing to see here. Move along. Go back and watch his other stuff, but don't watch this one.
So I have a question in regards to media reaction, and I already sort of alluded to it before, but do you guys think on the 8th that there'll be this much of a backlash against Bill Burr, or do you think this is because these people feel betrayed by Dave Chappelle?
I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, Bill Burr has the capacity to say something that the social justice left will run with and despise, but I don't think he's ever been seen as the kind of ally that Dave Chappelle was, the kind of icon and hero that Dave Chappelle was, who was speaking truth to power, quote unquote.
So do you think it's because then they're afraid that because their base would be fans of Dave Chappelle, that they would hear this and hear the truth, so they have to silence him?
This is a giant red pill. This is a giant red pill, right? They have to do what they can to make sure no one looks at it, no one ingests it, right? That this is Chappelle is one giant red pill.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're afraid. The greatest threat to the social justice left, to the crazy socialist left that we have today, is anyone who disagrees with them.
Well, reality in general, but also that.
Well, reality, but anyone who acknowledges reality, right? Anyone who speaks any amount of truth, anyone who for a moment says, I think we're lying to ourselves about this. They only sustain themselves with an echo chamber. That is it. They must not have any dissenting opinion, any dissenting voices outside. Otherwise, they will crumble to nothingness.
All right, I think that's a great way to end the review, so let's move on. And as always, the trailers are posted on the website on Saturdays, so if you want to get a preview of Trailer Takedown, go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. You can watch them before the episode. You can watch them after the episode. You can watch them during the episode. You can alternate, right? Watch the trailer, we talk about it. Watch the trailer, we talk about it.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
The final trailer, the second and final trailer for Joker was released, the Joaquin Phoenix origin film for the Batman villain. And I'm not specifically interested in talking about the trailer. The trailer finally has him say, call me the Joker. You see he goes on a talk show hosted by Robert De Niro. You see that he has a black girlfriend. We got to get that in there. We got to make sure our supervillains are not racist before they become evil. That's the year 2019, folks. I'm really glad. I was really worried that the Joker would have come from a place of racism. That would have really bothered me and triggered me if the Joker came from a place of racism rather than just pure nihilism. But what I'm interested to talk about is this trailer in relation to all the reviews that just came out from Venice Film Festival. So this just premiered at the Venice Film Festival. It's getting rave reviews, and they're even saying potential for Oscar nominations, especially for Joaquin Phoenix. And let's keep in mind now, the director is the same guy who did Road Trip and the Hangover movies.
Wow.
So this creates a problem for me. The problem is, this is looking more and more, and you know, Daniel and William, you can say if you agree or not when it's your turn. This is look more and more what I was worried about, that this is sympathy for the devil, that we're going to build up the Joker's backstory as if, you know, oh man, this is a man who just wanted to entertain. He just wanted to be a comedian and nobody would laugh at him. So he went insane and became a supervillain. So this is more towards like sympathy for the devil, it seems like. And that worries me. It also looks like this is very naturalistic, very slow, very understated, very much like, again, society is against him. And this is just his response to society. His response to society is just chaos. All of that is sounds like it's going to be terrible. It sounds like it's going to be boring. It sounds like it's going to be terrible thematically, arguably evil thematically. But because this is going to get so much hype, I'm definitely going to see it now. Hug. Yeah, exactly. So, Daniel, I know you said you didn't even watch the trailer.
That was Chappelle-esque in its misdirection. I thought you were going one way on that, and you went another. Yeah, I refuse to watch.
I have a duty, not an obligation, a duty to the listeners. And when I say duty, I mean this is what I've promised in this trade, where you listen to the show and I tell you about this stuff so you don't have to do it. That's the service I am providing you.
I thought you meant you had a poop. Okay, so I refuse to watch this trailer because I've been so disgusted by the previous trailers. So I'm not interested in, and spoiler alert, I'm not hugging this. I'm definitely tackling it. But the thing that we talked about at the very beginning of this is almost certainly true now in the people's reaction to this trailer, which is the Joker in the Nolan Batman universe is an aberration. He's almost like a spectacle, but you know, he's not part of the world. He's antithetical to the world that Nolan has built up. This Joker doesn't seem to be antithetical to the world. He seems to be a necessary consequence of the world. He seems to be an inevitability, to use a Thanos word from Avengers, which means that the entire world here is nihilistic. And he is just a consequence of it. I think that's horrific. I'm not interested in propping up that kind of evil, either in filmmaking or in character or in anything. So 100% tackle.
Tackle.
I will never watch this movie. William?
I, for one, feel like we should not oppress white people by having actors in whiteface, so I'm going to tackle.
Tackle. Second trailer.
The Aeronauts, because I guess William didn't have anything else to say, is an Amazon Prime movie about people who really want to conquer the sky with a hot air balloon. I don't understand.
Okay,
maybe you guys could explain this to me. Like, in the first half of this trailer, there were
based
a lot of lines.
Based on a true story.
There were a lot of lines in the beginning of this trailer that I should have liked. Like, oh man, she only thinks about herself, and oh man, they just want to discover and learn and grow and blah blah blah. And I was like, man, I feel like I should like this, but this looks fucking terrible and boring. So for me, and maybe you guys can get mad at me, but for me, this is a tackle.
Tackle.
Daniel, redeem me here.
What if we did Apollo 13 with hot air balloons? I didn't think it looked that bad. I do think it looks oddly comical because based on true stories of pioneers in the meteorology business, I'm sure the real life events that it is based on were nowhere near as exciting as this. And I do feel like they had to heighten the action and the drama in order to make this story interesting at all. So in that sense, it feels contrived and strange. And they had to get just incredibly good actors in order to pull this off at all. I will say that as a story about achievement and hashtag science, it doesn't look the worst. And if there was nothing else in the entirety of Netflix except this, and I was bored on a Saturday night, I'd pop it on and probably not be that offended by it. But it turns out there is other stuff in the world, so I'm not going to watch it, but I'm going to apathetically not watch it. Tackle.
Tackle.
It's Amazon Prime, not Netflix. And also, what I think this is an issue of is integration. Like, I get it, we want to do these based on a true story, but is this the best possible story you can tell for the innovation in meteorology? And what I mean by that is the concretes have to match the theme. Here, the concretes don't seem to match the theme. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
William?
So the female character, this is based on his true story, except for they actually replaced the hero in this story with a made-up female character. So I guess that's okay if you're making a drama, but if you're trying to say based on a true story, I think that seems like a bad idea. This is the male disposability in science, you know, it relates to that first story or that story from the first section about replacing the male photos, male portraits, erasing male achievements. So no way. There's no way I'm going to watch this. Tackle.
Tackle.
I'm
Someone
so check
tired.
And see if that scientist was a redhead.
I'm so tired of all these dude balloons.
Dude balloons. All right, let's move on.
Third trailer.
The Laundromat is about the lawyers who clean money for the rich. I don't even know. This just seemed to be like an anti-rich person trailer. I put this in for Daniel because it seemed like, you know, his sort of genre, like political.
Did it?
Well, before I watched it. Then I watched it, I got really annoyed at Gary Oldman's accent. This is just terrible. There's not even anything else to say about this. Netflix is just churning out so much content. Tackle.
Tackle.
This does not seem like a political thriller at all. It seems like a ripoff of The Big Short, except worse. And the problem with this is you have a cast that seems to be stellar. Meryl Streep, Gary Oldman, Antonio Banderas, and a cast and just a cavalcade of other really good actors. And contrary to you, Justin, I found Gary Oldman's accent to be hysterical throughout the trailer, but could not get past the overt anti-rich people themes to this. And there is no way I would watch something this nakedly propagandistic. Tackle.
Tackle.
William?
Yeah, this looked like we're trying to make like Ocean's 11, but more like fuck rich people. So it seems like someone took a bunch of movies that were good and tried to take elements and put them together into another movie. But I don't think it's going to work based on the trailer. So
Did you just describe the entire Hollywood system? Take elements that worked in one movie and try and force them into another?
I think I did.
Tackle. Final.
I don't use that
trailer.
One enough.
You're not going to use the way to step on it? Drop?
I don't take direction from you.
I was waiting for it. The island is...
Do not say it right.
The island...
Thank you.
Sorry, pronunciation. The island is a Netflix original series about people who are put on an island and then experiments are run on them. This very much looks similar to Lost, except they took all the shitty stuff out of Lost, where it's like, yay, oh my god, Dharma, save the world, blah, blah, and they focused on the experiment side of Lost, which everyone thought Lost was going to. So I feel like this is created by somebody who was really annoyed at the way Lost turned out and was like, you know what, I'm just going to take that and do it better. It even has the, did you notice, Daniel, it even has the eye opening from Lost in it?
Yeah.
But absolutely. Here's the thing. The name really bothers me. The reason the name of this show really bothers me is I don't think this is going to be pro-individualism. I think it's going to say that Island is the land where everyone is in the Thomas Hobbes war of every man against every man, and they're going to have to learn to work together. So even though this seems like it's like the antidote to Lost, I think this is going to end up in the same place as Lost, where it's like you always have to work together and love each other. Right, it's going to basically end in a church, where at least
there's lockers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
At least Lost had the balls to nakedly say that, right? Say what you will about Damon Lindelof. Damon Lindelof is honest, okay? And this is, again, I think, where the left has gone so far left. Damon Lindelof is sort of like Dave Chappelle, except he's a little more left. He's a true believer, whereas Dave Chappelle is sort of, you know, due to whatever reasons, isn't as far left as Lindelof. But Lindelof is still not as far left as the social justice because he's honest and he truly believes what he's saying and he doesn't believe he needs to hide and obfuscate and manipulate. And this show is, I'm afraid it's going to be more of the social justice side where we're not going to just blatantly end in a church the way Lost did. That said, there was still enough that I'm going to give this a chance for the potential, especially because of the relation to Lost and the echoing of Lost. So this is a tentative hug.
Hug.
Daniel?
Yeah, I was all set to tackle that one. And then
again with the zigzagging. What if we did Lost, but for millennials with no attention span? The island. Where we don't tease out the secrets, we give them all to you in the trailer. This show looks horrific, even if the name is reminiscent of one How to Survive a Zombie Apocalypse. I still don't like it. I don't like the branding. I don't like anything about this show. The actors look... This looks like something you'd find on the CW or some other terrible channel where they don't actually have money to hire actors.
I agree with that. They all look generic.
So this is gross and terrible looking. Tackle.
Tackle.
William?
I tried to watch this and pay attention, and maybe I have the opposite problem. You were talking about millennials with short attention span. I think if I don't see any depth right away, I get distracted. And I'm torn in situations like this because I want to see more original sci-fi. but this doesn't seem original, and it doesn't seem like it's discussing anything interesting in the sci-fi realm. And just like Justin, I'm afraid that this is going to be some sort of perversion or fake individualism, some Hobbesian universe thing. So I don't think I'm going to watch this. I'm going to tackle.
I just like all the number of things, like the fact that they're all in white and they're literally a man in black. And they, in the beginning, they're like, oh, our plane crashed here and we're all survivors on the island. We have to figure out a way to get back. And the island's speaking to us. It is so clear to me that they just wanted to do Lost, but do something different with it. And I just have no respect for that.
Well, okay. None. First of all, the plane joke, to slightly defend them, the plane joke was, oh, how did we all get here? Oh, what, did our plane crash? Like, it was a meta joke. It was a tongue-in-cheek, like, oh, we all watched Lost. Are we now stuck in a Lost situation?
Yeah, the only thing missing from that is the fake Sawyer character in this saying, what is this, Lost?
Yeah, there was that guy that I thought was going to say that, and I thought he was going to be the Sawyer character, and then I was going to be like, all right, fine, I'll watch it. And then I got to the end, and I was like, all right, fine, I'll watch it.
This looks gross. I tackled everything, but clearly if I had to watch one of these, it would be The Aeronauts, because it is the least offensive of these four trailers.
Erasing a white male is the least offensive to you?
Yes, shockingly.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat, because I triggered the rule here. I would rather watch The Aeronauts and just pretend like it wasn't based on a true story. Just live it as a sci-fi or steampunk film and just watch it and enjoy it on that level. So that's what I would do as well.
Man, interesting that you guys tackled all four. Won't even give The Island a chance.
Nope.
No. The Island of Misfit Stories.
When it has a countdown that switches to symbols, then you'll know.
We have to go back. That's what happened. Lost. Hollywood was like, we have to go back, so they made The Island.
Yeah.
All right, I can keep making Lost jokes all day. But here's the question for you, gentlemen. William, do you have the music for Belichick Your Premises?
I do.
Do we want to do it, or do we want to, for the sake of time, because this has gone on a long time, do we want to just do a Belichick Your Premises preview next week, because the Patriots don't play till 5:30 anyway?
I think that.
Yeah.
Because the only thing we have to talk about is fantasy football, and I don't think anyone's interested in fantasy football, including the people in our fantasy football league.
Okay, so I'm going to leave all this in, and ladies and gentlemen, next week we are going to have the third segment be Belichick Your Premises. That means this week we're not going to have a third segment, so sorry. But you got a lot, I think, in the news, or takedown, the analysis of Dave Chappelle's new stand-up. I think you got a great episode. I think you got money, or you got value for your money, Patreon supporters, and the rest of you, you fucking freeloaders, you got lots of shit for free. So we're just going to put a bow on this episode. What did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that LA will soon be raising housing prices for women in order to fix the imbalance in the homeless population between men and women.
Fair enough.
Daniel?
I learned that everything has a violent past, including like labradoodles. Can't wait for the article on how labradoodles have a violent history of oppression and genocide. Can't wait. Justin?
I learned that I am Alex Jones.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's a horrible way to end anything. But nonetheless, we hope you enjoyed your trip here to the Midside. Why don't you give us a couple bucks on Patreon if you did? I'm going to put that one first this week. Patreon.com/TheMidside, where you can go and help us support the show. A dollar, I don't know, you know, give anything you want every time we produce a piece of content. There's even some exclusive content for Patreon subscribers only. And yeah, it really helps us keep the lights on, helps us pay for hosting and new microphones and things like that. So we really appreciate it. But if not, no worries. You can go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the past episodes of this show, including Snyder series and Nolan notes and all the stuff there, including articles by Justin. And you can go to themidside.com/store to get your Midside merch. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Google Play. Give us 5 stars. That really helps us destroy the competition. We have so many 5-star ratings. It's really absurd. Why don't you be the next one? That's awesome. Tell a friend about the show.
I have an idea. For the 5-star rating, I want you to go there and I want you to give a 5-star rating and talk about how anti-Snyder I am. Because this week Twitter has decided that I am anti-Snyder. So put that in your review on iTunes.
iTunes? How old are you? Tell a friend about the show or introduce them to the Liberty.me stream if they're libertarian. We thank them for syndicating us. But telling a friend about the show is the number one way your friends find out about the show and the number one way that the show grows. All the word of mouth people I hear who said, oh yeah, someone told me about the show. It really warms the cockles of me heart. If I had one, to hear all these stories about people who were turned on the show by their friends. So thank you so much for doing that. And please continue to do so. Until next time, we love you lots.
I actually have a funny story about that. So I told a dude at work about the podcast and he left it up in the background on his phone. And for some reason, it accidentally started playing and he started listening to it. And then he told another guy at work to listen to it. So now people randomly are listening to it at work and it's hilarious. No.
Terrifying.
I guess. I don't know. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Umlesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a violent pumpkin spice day.
Can't wait for the Washington Post's expose next week on tacos called The Apocalypse is a Cumin. Thank you. I held that one in for the after show, not for the real show. Just for you, Justin.
Yeah, I'm no selling that one. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.